back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yetta. We're going to turn the page now and walk away from the very institutions, both political and military, patriotism as well, that God has asked us to walk away from. And yes, he did ask us to walk away from our country when Paul wrote his letter to the Romans, telling all those who would listen to him that we should be submit to our government and to ruling authorities. He lied. God specifically tells us that if we wish to walk to him and be adopted into his family, if we wish to participate in the covenant, the lone prerequisite of doing that is walking away from our country and from disassociating ourselves with all forms of Babel, which would be Babylon, religion, and politics. And because far too many Christians believe Paul and therefore discard everything Yahweh and Yahusha said, they defend their religion with the Pauline doctrine. We were considering a statement yesterday by such a Christian who wrote me saying that the Torah was unobservable, suggesting that are you indeed observing the Torah? Do you observe all of the Hebrew laws of cleanliness? Do you eat pork? And do you observe the Shabbat? Well, in a moment here, we're going to observe the Torah. Going to show you how easy it is to observe the Torah. So, do I observe the Torah? Yes. All I have to do to observe the Torah is to examine it. That is what observe means, after all. Do I observe all of the Hebrew laws of cleanliness? There are the laws that would be comprised and delineated, 613 of them, in the rabbinical writings, in the Mishpat, and the and in the Talmud, have nothing to do with Yahweh. So do I observe them only for the express purpose of showing that they are ungodly? And there are no laws in the Torah. The Torah is not comprised of laws. Torah means teaching. As for cleanliness, when you observe Yah's testimony regarding water and using it as a solvent, and its role in cleaning us, it's all symbolic. It is symbolic of how water is used to clean things so that we understand that by cleaning our souls that Yah is performing this benefit for us. We talked about the dietary instructions in yesterday's program, how Yah provides a list of things which are good for us to eat and not good for us to eat, and everything on his list of good is good and nourishing. Everything on his list of this is not good for you was, in fact, bad for us. As for observing the Shabbat, easy to do. There are no laws associated with Shabbat, only instructions, and that guidance is all about understanding that it represents God's pattern of 6 plus 1 equals 7, which is the formula by which everything important to God is developed upon. And we also find that Shabbat is God's promise to us. In fact, the Hebrew word for promise, for oath, is Shabbat. So, here is how we go about observing the Torah. And Yahweh said to Moshe, rise up to me on the mountain and exist here near me, beholding my name, and I will give to you accordingly the tablets of stone and the Torah. And the Torah. It's God's gift to us if we wish to be, to exist with him, if we wish to embrace his name. So he goes on, it wasn't just the Torah. He says, I will give to you accordingly the tablets of stone and the Torah, in addition to the terms and conditions of the binding contract, the Ha Mitzvah, the authorized directions and written instructions which convey the terms of the covenant, which I wrote to become the source of teaching, instruction, guidance, and direction. God is a very effective communicator. I don't say that because I just happen to like his style or I just happen to like him. And I do like his style, and I do like him. By the way, his style takes some getting used to. Because your first inclination when you come to know what Yah is teaching us is to say, why didn't you just say it more succinctly? Why did I have to go through all of this investigation and observe, you know, this full tapestry of your communication and then have to put the pieces together to understand precisely what you were communicating? That very often is the first response. Why didn't God say, if you want to form a relationship with me, here's the five things that you must agree to. If you wish to be saved by me, here are the seven steps that you must walk. And here is the specific meaning of each of these seven steps. And here is the meaning of each of the five requirements, terms and conditions of the covenant. And here are the five benefits of the covenant. And so it takes some getting used to because our tendency, having grown out and been indoctrinated in a political and religious climate where everything is dumbed down into sound bites, is that for things to be presented that way. There are four spiritual laws. You know, pray this simple prayer, sinner's prayer, and, you know, place your faith in the gospel of grace. No thinking required. But God's not that way. God's of the conviction that if you don't have an interest in investing the time to observe the whole cloth of his testimony, and then to come to understand how all of those fibers and colors collectively present a unified portrait not only of him, but his plan, which is the covenant, then he has no interest in spending the rest of his existence with you. What God is offering us is to live with him forever. And so God is discriminating. He's saying, I only want those who are really interested in doing this for the rest of their life, because this is what I find interesting, to spend the rest of their lives with me. So if you're not interested in observing the evidence and of considering it so that you come to understand it by putting the various pieces together, then God's saying, you're going to make my life miserable and you're going to be miserable because that's what we're going to do in eternity. We're going to grow by learning. And so that's the way that God communicates with us. The testimony is all there. The evidence is all there. The means to understand it is all there. But you got to be willing to invest the time to work at it. All right. That said, I was trying to make the point that God is a very effective communicator. He is now introducing the concept of his Torah. He's saying that the tablets and the Torah and the terms and conditions of the covenant all have something in common. And that they are not only for those who wish to exist with God and those who are willing to embrace his name, but he's saying that that he himself wrote them, that he is the author of the tablets, which were cut in stone, that he is the author of the Torah, and that he is the author of the terms and conditions of the covenant. He himself wrote them. But then he goes on to say something that ought to have stopped 3,000 years of religious malfeasance. He goes on and defines this collection of things which is found in the Torah. He actually gives us the verb which defines and describes the purpose of the Torah. You see, Torah is based upon the concluding verb of this statement of Yara. So here is God saying, I want you to come up to exist with me on the mountain, so that I can give you the Torah, which I wrote, for what purpose? To become the source of teaching, instruction, guidance, and direction, Yara. So how on earth did despicable religious individuals come about defining Torah as law when God, in his introductory statement, he said, I wrote it, I'm going to give it to you, for what reason? As a source of teaching, instruction, guidance, and direction, Yara, how did they turn teaching, guidance, and direction into law? And based upon renaming it law, creating two religions. The religion of Judaism that is rife with laws and a religion of Christianity that hates these laws, when in fact it isn't about law. Yara means to reveal and to show what we need to know, to pour out and flow forth information. Yara is the source from which teaching, guidance, instruction, and direction flow. Yara is the operative verb that defines Yerushalom. Yerushalom is the name of the place from which guidance and direction, instruction regarding shalom, our reconciliation flow. Yara tells us that Yah's Torah, the tablets which are contained therein, and the terms and conditions of the covenant, which is the single most important aspect of the Torah, is not only something that he wrote, but that he wrote it to be a source from which teaching, instruction, guidance, and direction flow. To guide is not to legislate. When you are taught, you no longer need to have faith, because you can know. When you receive instruction, you no longer have to believe, because you understand. It is a powerful concept. You see, instruction and direction are mental things. They are the kind of stuff that after observing the instructions, you can process what you have learned so that you come to understand. And based upon understanding, you can exercise free will and choose whether or not to embrace that teaching, whether to integrate that teaching in your life. And of course, direction and guidance is the very essence of what fathers do. Fathers direct and guide to their children so that they will ultimately do what is in their best interest. In God's case, he directs us and guides us through his Torah teaching to walk away from human institutions, from all things associated with Babel confusion, from our country, and thus from politics and patriotism. He tells us to stop relying on the institutions of man, as we do when we celebrate Veterans Day, which occurred yesterday, and instead to rely upon him. But how do you come to trust and rely upon Yahweh? Through his Torah teaching. Because you can't trust someone you do not know. You cannot rely on that which you do not understand. God provides the means to trust and rely upon him. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. You can engage in this discussion. In fact, you're even free, if you're a Christian, to debate God here and to state Pauline doctrine in difference to God's instruction, if you're so inclined to do so. To disagree with God, you can call 877-300-7645. Yes, we'll listen to you. If you want to present Paul's position in opposition to God on this program, you're free to do so. Now, I will hold whatever you say accountable, hold you accountable for whatever you say, but feel free to be an advocate for your religion, if you so choose to, and contradict what God has said here. Because God has said to those who would observe the Torah that how you observe the Torah is to learn from it, to be guided by it, to be instructed by it. That's what God has said. And Yahweh said to Moshe, rise up to me on the mountain and exist here near me, beholding my name, and I will give you, freely offer as a gift to you accordingly, the tablets of stone and the Torah, in addition to the terms and conditions of the covenant, which I wrote to become the source of their teaching, instruction, guidance, and direction. It is absolutely clear that the Torah and its two most essential elements, according to God, the tablets of stone, which are reported in the Torah, which now sit inside of the Ark of the Covenant, in addition to the terms and conditions of the covenant itself, which is ha-mitzvah, exist for the express purpose of guiding us, of teaching us, of instructing us, at least those of us who value Yahweh's name and who wish to exist with Him. Clear. Unequivocal. We observe Yah's Torah by examining His teaching and guidance and considering His instruction. It is that simple. Torah is based on Yara, and God just told us so. The reason, amongst many, that I consider Yahweh to be such an effective communicator is that He almost always defines His terms in the first use. Here, for the first time, He is introducing His Torah. Now, He spoke of His Torah teaching as He had discussions with Abraham, telling Abraham that He provided Torah teaching, Torah guidance to Abraham. But here now is the book itself. And He says, I wrote it. And He says, not only did I write it, I wrote it to guide you, to teach you, to instruct you, to direct your lives. All you have to do, therefore, to observe the Torah is to read it. That's all you need to do. And you are engaged in observation. Learn from it. And you are observing it. God goes on to say, and it came to exist just when Moshe finished writing the words of the Torah. Upon this, the Almighty's written scroll, successfully completing the eternal and restoring witness, Moshe directed the Lowi to lift up and carry Yahweh's Ark of the Covenant, saying, accept and grasp hold of the written scroll of the Torah, and place this alongside Yahweh's Ark of the Covenant. Your God, He will always exist for you in the eternal witness and enduring testimony. Does this sound like the statement of a God who says, you know, this Torah has nothing to do with the covenant. This Torah has nothing to do with existing near me. This Torah is only for a short period of time, and I'm going to replace it with a New Testament, and I'm going to have a guy who demeans my Torah tell you that it's been replaced by the gospel of grace. Does it sound to you like God is speaking of His Torah in that light? Or does it sound to you that once the Torah was complete, that would mean the teaching, the instruction, the guidance were complete, that Yahweh took this written document, engraved in writing, so that we even today would know what He had to say? And then He said, I want you to make certain that these instructions, this guidance, is placed next to the single most important symbol on earth, the Ark of the Covenant. For a reason? I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Back in a moment. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We're in the process of observing the Torah. All we need to do to observe the Torah is to read it and then think about what God has told us so that we understand what it is that He is offering, as in addition to appreciate what He is encouraging us to walk away from. And so here is the concluding statement about the Torah. It is from the Torah, and it reads, and when it came to exist, just when Moshe completely finished writing the words of the Torah, which is the teaching, the guidance, the direction, upon this the Almighty's written scroll, so this is written instruction from God, which is beneficial because there's a difference between that which is written and that which is oral. You cannot observe that which is oral. You can observe that which is written. You can listen to that which is recited, that which is oral, and the difference becomes somewhat mitigated when you recite that which is written, so that you can listen to the testimony of Yahweh. But there is still a difference between observation, which is the prospect of one's eyes. One uses one's eyes to focus on something so as to observe it. In the case, a written document is the most logical place to observe teaching. And so God is telling us that, yes, my testimony, my Torah teaching is observable because it's in writing. He is defining what it means to observe by telling us that his testimony is recorded on a written scroll. He said that Moshe had written it, Katab, had inscribed it using an alphabet to communicate on a written scroll, which is Shefer, which is a written letter and inscribed document designed to recount, relate, rehearse, and declare something. So, observation, how does one observe? Well, Christian, you do not observe by doing unless the doing is focusing upon a written document. Examining evidence with your eyes. Successfully completing, this testimony reads from the Torah, the eternal witness, the odd, sometimes vocalized ed, which is the enduring testimony. It is that which is forever and that which is restoring. And so God is equating his Torah teaching, his Torah guidance, his Torah instructions to his eternal witness, to his enduring testimony. And so if you wish to know the enduring testimony of God, you know where to turn. God himself has said that his everlasting and eternal witness is found in the words, the Devar HaTorah, the words of the Torah, which were written on a scroll. Now that itself, my friends, is extraordinarily important, because God proves that he authored his Torah through prophetic testimony. And he describes his role in the creation of the universe and of life. And he tells us that the single most important thing to him is the covenant. And he presents this covenant in this Torah to us. And yet Paul tells us that the covenant presented in the Torah is enslaving, that it is of Hagar, that it cannot save, that it is a cruel taskmaster. And yet God is saying just the opposite, that this is the Torah that presents the terms and conditions of his covenant. As a matter of fact, so much so that in this particular statement, he is telling the Lowy, those who join and unite, to lift up and carry Yahweh's Ark of the Covenant, and to place his complete Torah teaching alongside of it. So that as we lift up and bear all of the benefits of Yahweh's Ark of the Covenant, that we will recognize that the written scroll of the Torah is adjacent to it, that it leads us to it, that it explains its very purpose. If you want to understand the symbolism and the benefit of the Ark of the Covenant, look to the Torah. That's what God is telling you here. And even Ark of the Torah, and it's Yahweh's Ark of the Covenant, by the way, Ark of the Covenant. Ark is from Aaron. It means source of light, enlightenment, and choice, free will. Ark. Enlightened, this is from Aaron, enlightened free will regarding the covenant, Bereth, the family-oriented relationship, saying, accept and grasp hold of the written scroll of the Torah and place this alongside Yahweh's Ark of the Covenant. In other words, the teaching is the essential aspect of enlightenment that enables the choice to participate in the covenant. If you wish to make the choice on an enlightened and informed basis to participate in Yahweh's covenant, then you will do so by observing His Torah teaching. The Torah and the Ark of the Covenant are inseparable. One leads to the other. One is the product of the other. That is what God is saying here. Your God, He will always exist. He was, He is, and He always will be there for you in the eternal and enduring testimony. His everlasting testimony in His Torah teaching is where we will find God. If you want to see Him, read the Torah. If you want to meet Him, read the Torah. If you want to get to know Him, read the Torah. If you want to engage in a relationship with Him, read the Torah. If you want to understand the terms and conditions of that relationship, read the Torah. If you want to become enlightened so that you can express free will and embrace this covenant relationship with God, read the Torah. If you wish to always exist with God, read the Torah. Folks, it isn't any more complicated than that. You observe the Torah by reading it. It is written for us and set alongside the Ark of the Covenant so we would know why it is written. It was defined as Yara, as God's teaching. It has been defined as His testimony, as His witness to us. Why, then, are Christians so opposed to it? Why, then, are Muslims so opposed to it? Why, then, are socialist secular humanists so opposed to it? God proved that He wrote it, and He told us that if we wish to exist with Him, if we wish to find Him, to meet Him, to engage in a relationship with Him, we will find Him in His testimony, the witness that comprises His Torah teaching. It's powerful. It's simple. Not difficult. One can easily replace their religion with reason when you consider these words. Here again. And now, Yisrael, listen to and understand God's clearly communicated prescriptions of what we should do in life to live, and God's means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, which are the result of the relationship. I learned and am teaching you accordingly to act upon for the purpose that you will be restored to life and continue to live, and that you will come and return, and you will be an heir receiving an inheritance by occupying the land, which as a result of the relationship, Yahweh, your God, the God of your fathers, gave to you. This, too, is a powerful statement which we can observe and have just observed by reciting Dabarim, the words. This was Dabarim, Deuteronomy 4:1. I hate to say Deuteronomy, but unfortunately, because religious leaders have been so dishonest, if I just say Dabarim and tell you that it means words, and I tell you that it was from chapter 4, verse 1, most people wouldn't know where to look. So I reference the despicable change of God's testimony to Deuteronomy, which means second law. There is no law, and there is only one covenant, one Torah, one God, and only one means to benefit from all of these things. But think of this passage here in a moment. For a moment. God is telling us that He provided His Torah teaching to us so that what? We would be restored to life. In other words, the path to life, the means to life, the means to our salvation is found in the where, folks? The Torah. It is the antithesis of what Paul said that it was. It's his teaching that not only restores us to life, which is a good thing, and that's a nice start, but I want to tell you, if your salvation is defined as eternal life, you're in serious trouble. Because most of those people who are restored to eternal life, who cease to be mortal, won't find themselves in God's company, but will find themselves estranged from Him. That is what Sheol, or hell, is all about. It is eternal separation from God. Eternal life, yes, but eternal separation as well. And so this isn't just for the purpose that we are restored to life and that we continue to live, that we are saved and preserved. It's also that we can come and return, that we can arrive harvested, whole and complete, living in a relationship with Yahweh. The Torah is to enable us to return to God. It directs our path so we return to Him. And it also restores our life. So let's read this again with the realization of what the Torah represents. And now, Yisrael. Yisrael means individuals who strive and engage, who persist and endure with God. Listen to and understand. Shama. Hear, receive, and proclaim the news. This was scribed in the imperative mood, which is expresses an exhortation whereby the audience is encouraged to choose of their own volition to acknowledge and accept God's clearly communicated prescriptions of what we should do in life to live. This is from our friend Choke, which is an inscription that is cut into stone that cuts us into a relationship. I'm Yada, back in a moment with Shattering Myths. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering Yahweh's testimony on his Torah teaching. Very profound statement that God has made here. He's not only equated his Torah with enlightened free will and the covenant relationship, saying that they are synonymous, that they are forever associated with one another, and that if we're looking for God, that is where we'll find Him, is in his Torah. That, you know, Yosha was saying in a passage that we considered a few days ago, that diligently seek and you will find. Well, God has told you where to look for Him. If you wish to find God, there's only one place that you can seek Him, and that is in His Torah. And now, Yisrael, individuals who strive and engage with God, who persist and endure with God, who are empowered by God, listen to and understand. Shama. Shama is the compatriot of Shamar. Shamar is the Hebrew word meaning to observe, to examine and consider, is Shamar, the compatriot, the companion word to Shamar that Yah uses regularly in association with his Torah, with his teaching, with his Dabar, which is his word, with his Ed, which is his testimony, is either Shama or Shamar. And Shama is listen to and understand. You listen to Yah's testimony by reciting his testimony, and you observe it by reading it. So these things are related concepts. So now, those individuals who strive and engage, who endure and exist with God, listen to and understand God's clearly communicated prescriptions of what we should do in life to live. Mitzvah was the last concept that God conveyed. Mitzvah is one of the three primary teachings that Yahweh always tells us to focus upon when we are considering His guidance. Mitzvah represents the terms and conditions of the covenant. Well, the next two are both stated in this statement. One of them is the choke, and the other is the mishpat. The choke is the clearly communicated prescriptions of what we should do in life to live. It is that which is cut and inscribed, so it's speaking of that which is written and engraved, that cuts us into a relationship, specifically the covenant. And God's means to achieve justice and resolve is the mishpat, The myths thought of the means that God has provided along the seven steps that begin with the doorway to life known as Passover and going to Matzah, where is the threshold upon which our souls are cleansed so that we can enter God's company and be adopted into His family. There are seven steps in that relationship. They collectively represent the Mishpat, the means that Yahweh has provided to make us innocent, to achieve justice and resolve disputes, which as a result of the relationship I learned and am teaching. So Moshe is telling us that by studying and observing and by listening to and writing Yahweh's Torah, he learned from it. So he says, I learned and am teaching Lamad. I acquired the information which I am sharing and instructing you accordingly to act upon, to engage in, to celebrate, to profit from, for the purpose that you will be restored to life and continue to live. If you come to observe Yahweh's Torah and come to understand what He is offering, you are in a position where you can act by responding to what God has offered and benefit from eternal life. Chaya is that word. Chaya even includes Yah's name. He is the source of life eternal. It's Chaya speaks of being saved, of having your life preserved, of being renewed, of being revived, of being nurtured, of continuing to grow, even to flourish. This was scribed in the imperfect conjugation, telling us that the benefits of restoration and life, salvation and growth will continue to consistently unfold throughout the whole fabric of time. And then this companion to that, and you shall come and return. Because being restored to life eternal is only good if that life is going to be spent with the one who is good, Yahweh. And so, bo is this word here. You will arrive and be harvested whole and complete. And you will be an heir receiving an inheritance. How do we become an heir of God? How does anyone become an heir? You become an heir by being a family member. In this case, being adopted into the covenant enables us to inherit all that our Heavenly Father has to give, which just happens to be the entire universe, life eternal, growth, empowerment, enrichment, all of these things, so that we can live and occupy His realm, which as a result of the relationship, Yahweh, God of our fathers, has given to us. It is His gift, the gift of His Torah, which is the gift of life and the ability to return to Yahweh. Thank you for listening. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even if I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that